Friends, you know, several years ago, I was blessed to do corrective LASIK surgery. You know, eye correction, vision correction with my eyes. Actually, one of my eyes, but I'll explain that in a moment. I think I began wearing glasses, corrective lenses, late elementary school or middle school. I don't remember when I started, but I just remember enough to know that by the time I had my eyes corrected, by that time, I just know that I can't remember many years not having contacts or glasses or something going on. And then the last years before I had the surgery, I couldn't wear contacts any longer because my eyes wouldn't take them anymore, so I was wearing glasses all the time. Many of you wear glasses or contact lenses, and you know that it's really not that big a deal. You get used to that. It just becomes your routine, your regular part of life. Unless you have a contact fold in your eye or tear, that's a real pain, isn't it? Or you get your glasses smeared or your glasses break or something like that. That's no fun. And so corrective eyesight really is nice on that realm of things. In my case, I kind of stumbled into this opportunity when I had the surgery several years ago. My sister-in-law went to a place in Dayton, Ohio, and had corrective surgery done to her eyes. And later we were talking, I was asking about how it went, and she said to me, she said, you know, I think they may have a program there where they do pastors for free, clergy for free. And she'd seen a poster or a sign or something at the clinic where she was, and I thought, well, gosh, if it's free, I'm usually interested in free. And so I contacted them, and sure enough, they do two pastors a month, LASIK surgery for two clergy people a month, every month, for free. And they do people from all over the country, and some out of the country will come in to have this procedure done. They've learned about it so much. And because of that, there are so many people that do it. I was on a waiting list for a year, but I was finally able to go in and have that procedure done. And I told you that I only had one of my eyes corrected, so let me explain that to you. When I went to my first appointment, I learned that the corrective surgery they do would correct my distant vision. But for reading, I would still need to wear glasses. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not sure that's that much help to me, because that's kind of the opposite of what I've been doing. I'd been wearing glasses, and I'd have to take them off to read. So now I wasn't going to have glasses, but I had to put glasses on to read. And I spend a lot of my time in the week in the Bible and reading and on my computer. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Even though it's free, I'm not sure it's worth it for me. But then he told me about this. He said, unless you do monovision. Now, some people have heard of monovision. Some of you may be using monovision, but I hadn't heard of monovision, so I'm like, well, what's monovision? He says, well, that's when you use one eye for distance and one eye for reading. He said it works for about 70% of people. Your mind just figures it out, and you don't know the difference. But when you're reading, you can read, and when the other eye, then the brain just kind of ignores. But when you're seeing distance, you can see distance, and the reading eye, the brain just kind of ignores, and it works pretty well for some people. I thought to myself, well, that might be good for me. Then I learned that my left eye was already at perfect reading prescription. So all I would have to do is do corrective distance on my right eye. Well, I heard what the doctor said, and I thought this just might work for me. And part of the reason I thought it might work for me is because a few months earlier, Eli was playing basketball on a church basketball league, and we were driving to his game. I was driving to his game, and one of the lenses fell out of my glasses. My left lens fell out, and I couldn't get it back in. The glasses were broke, and I'm driving. But I realized, hey, I'm doing okay with this. This isn't making a big difference to me. And I drove the rest of the way there. And then we got to the game, and at halftime, one of the referees, who I happen to know, pulled me out at halftime with another dad for fun to do a free throw contest. And in the middle of the game, at halftime of the game, and I remember poking my finger through where the lens was, and I said, I can't do this. I'm missing a lens in my glasses. And he said, it's just for fun. Do it anyway. And so I did, and I made like 8 out of 10 free throws with one lens in my glasses. I beat the other dad. And then the ref said to me, he said, well, I'd hate to see how you would have done with both eyes. So the guy told me about this monovision. I'm like, you know, I think my brain could do this. And so I went for it and had the LASIK surgery done on one eye, and it's been great for me. I mean, being able to have perfect eyesight at a distance and to still be able to read things, that's been beautiful for me, a tremendous blessing, and I'm very thankful to God for my eyesight, and you all should be thankful for your eyesight as well. But do you know what? Here's the thing. Here's the thing with our eyes. With our eyes comes great responsibility to use good sense. Great responsibility to use good sense. You've heard the phrase before, your eyes are the portal into your soul, your eyes are the window into your soul, right? You've heard that. Well, according to the Proverbs, our eyes can either lead us to great trouble or they can lead us to great good, because what we see and what we do with what we see will impact who we are and who we become. Our eyes are the portals. They're the windows, the portals that allow us, allow things into our minds and into our hearts. Caroline used to teach our kids as they were growing up, you can't unsee something. Once you've seen it, it's in there. You can't unsee it, so you have to be careful what you see. We have to be responsible with these portals that we call eyes. People who view too much violence often have their minds and their hearts hardened toward pain, toward injury and death. With all the horrific shootings happening in our country right now, it's not all that uncommon that you find that shooters, they actually had a history of violent video games, violent entertainment. Those things grow a dullness in us to the value of human life. You can't spend a great amount of your time in violent games and violent killing movies and not have that do something to you, not have some effect, and to have that impact your sensitivity of your heart to some degree. People who use their eyes to view pornography do their mind and their heart a great disservice. Pornography heightens your sense to need this visual stimulation, while more importantly, it puts you at an arm's distance from being able to have the real kind of relationship with another person that God's intended for you to have. Almost every sexual criminal in the world began with some perversion form of pornography, which sees people as objects for gratification and not for as the God-created human beings with a heart, soul, and mind that they are. Spending the bulk of your time using your eyes to watch TV or spending all your time on your phone or your iPad, it dulls your whole brain toward real life with real people and real relationships. We have young people today who don't even know how to have like a two-minute in-person conversation with another person that they don't know. They don't know anything about manners or social cues or taking interest in real person relationships. How many times have you been out in a restaurant and you see a family around the table with each person on their phone? They're not even talking to one another. They're not even looking at one another. They're not even noticing. Sometimes they're texting the person across the table, right? It happens frequently without even seeing one another. No, friends, we cannot neglect the use of our eyes. We cannot. And so today we're going to look at what the good news, the good sense of the Proverbs teaches us about our eyes, these portals to our mind and to our heart. Let's begin with a basic phrase, and it's this phrase, eyes are for seeing. Eyes are for seeing. So many times in life we bump into people, into problems, into predicaments because we spend too much time in our life not really seeing. Not really seeing. Here are three things that good sense teaches us about how eyes are for seeing. Three things about how eyes are for seeing. The first is it teaches what God sees. What God sees. One of the reasons that we entertain so many things with our eyes that we have no business entertaining is because we forget about or we don't realize how much God sees, what God's really seeing. Friends, God's not a fool. God isn't the parent who shoves a phone into their kid's hand to try to get the kid to pay attention to the phone so they'll be quiet, and the kid goes off and is being molded by these silly, innocent cartoons or these maybe action movies where there's so much trigger happening that thousands of rounds of gunfire go off. God's not like that. God is also very aware of what you and I choose to focus our eyes on and to allow into our own minds and hearts. God sees. He sees all. Let's look at a couple of the Proverbs about what God sees. First Proverbs 15:3 says, The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. In every place. Do you think that you're the only one aware of what your eyes are seeing? Do you think that you've actually hidden that away with nobody else being aware? No, the eyes of the Lord are in every place. He keeps watch on the evil and the good. Now, that really is a positive part of God in that it helps us know that he can handle every atrocity in this world. And so, as Jesus' followers, we can take peace and hope in God that he sees what's going on when everybody else is running scared. We don't have to run scared. However, the sobering part of this verse is that he sees your and my good, but he also sees your and my evil. And so we better not allow ourselves to be lured into visual traps of ungodly focus. You've heard the phrase, you've heard the song, you've heard it just a little bit ago earlier in worship, that little kid song, "Be careful, little eyes, what you see. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. For the Father's up above, he's looking down in love. Be careful, little eyes, what you see." There's great truth in that. There's great truth in that. Proverbs 5:21 makes the point even more clear. It says, "For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths." Again, the upside is God's got his eye on you. You're not alone to try to figure out this world by yourself. God sees you, and that's really good. The downside, you're not hiding anything from God. You're not hiding anything. It's really an upside, but it feels like a downside. He sees when you turn your eyes to perversion and when you turn it to selfishness. So what do you do? What do you do with that? Here's the best thing for you to do. The best thing for you to do, stop trying to hide it from God. Just stop trying to hide it. Just bring it out into the open before him and ask him to change what you see. Ask him to change so you see things through his eyes. Just lay it all out before him. "God, there's my struggle. You already see it. You already know it. I'm not going to try to hide it any longer. Change me. Change how I see." Us trying to hide our minds and hearts from the eyes of the Lord are like when a kid tries to hide behind a skinny lamp and he thinks his parents don't see him. You know, he gets behind him because his eyes are behind the lamp. He can't see his parents. So he just assumes his parents can't see him, and his parents see him the whole time, right? Behind that skinny lamp. It's not true that his parents don't see him, and neither is it true that God doesn't see you, because at the moment that you're not looking at him, it doesn't change the fact that he still sees you. He still sees you. His eyes are on you. Here's more good sense about what God sees. Proverbs 16:2 says, "All the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirit." Too often our own view of ourselves, it's skewed by what we choose to see. "I did this, and I did that, and I achieved something else, and I accomplished so much, and so I'm looking pretty good in my own eyes. I'm looking pretty good," and God says, "Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, so what's really going on in your spirit? What's really going on in your heart? How's that looking? What's your love factor like right now?" A lot of people can do things, and even good things, and still have their heart be very far from God. "Be very far from me," God says. "You're just looking at the outside appearances," God says, "when I see straight through to the heart, to your spirit." God sees, friends. He sees. He really sees. Let's look at the second thing that good sense teaches us about how we have our eyes for seeing, and it's this: God gives us eyes to see. He gives us eyes to see. Look, it's no mystery or surprise to God that you have eyes to see. He gave you eyes so that you will see, and that's a beautiful thing. That's what makes it so important that we're using our eyes to see real things, the deep things, the purposeful things, the eternal things of this world, and not just to be like a kid in a candy shop who scours all the shelves trying to figure which thing's going to satisfy him the most. Listen to Proverbs 20:12. "The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both." He's made them both. God gave you the ability to hear, the ability to see, so that you can take all of him in. So you can take him in, not just his stuff, not just his stuff, but take him in. He's given you all creation so that you'll know him, the creator. Not just blow it all on the creation, but so you'll see the creator. When you stop short of him, friends, and just enjoy what he's made around you, you'll find that's just not enough. It's not enough for you. You need Jesus. And he made you to see and to hear so that you would find Jesus. Do you know what another cool thing is about how God's made us? There are some people in the world who, for whatever reason, they can't hear or they can't see. Maybe they were born that way. Maybe something happened along the way where they lost their hearing or their sight. Well, God's made us in such a way that even when we lose the ability to have those senses of hearing or seeing, God heightens the other senses that we have to extra receptivity and other ways in our minds and our hearts so that you cannot see at all in this world, but you can still see God. You cannot hear at all in this world, but you can still hear the voice of God. Anything you see or hear is for the purpose of us seeing and hearing him. It's to drive us to him. One other thing that good sense teaches about eyes being for seeing is this. We shouldn't see ourselves as more than what we are. And in it's all about me world like we live in, it can become very easy for us to elevate ourselves, the view of ourselves above others. We really do spend a lot of time looking at ourselves through kind of distorted lenses. I've had the privilege in my life now to live 5 different places. Small towns, suburbs of big cities, rural communities. And one of the things that living in different places does for you is it enlarges your view on life and of the world. I mean, there's a whole lot that I've not seen. Don't get me wrong. But I've seen a lot more than what many others have seen by the places that I've lived. Here's what you learn by living in different places. There's always a bigger pond somewhere with a bigger fish. There always is. You and I are not nearly as big, we're not nearly as influential as we may think that we are. So some sober eyesight of ourselves can be a helpful thing. However, the other truth is God is way bigger and God is way more influential than we'll ever comprehend. And so if we set our eyes on him, the rest really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Here's what good sense says about how us seeing ourselves. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 7 says, "Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil." Proverbs 21:22 says, "Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the heart." And Proverbs 30:12-13 says, "There are those who are clean in their own eyes, but are not washed of their filth." There are those, how lofty are their eyes, how high their eyelids lift. You may think that you're clean when you're really filthy on the inside. You may see yourself higher than others when the only thing that's really high is the lifting of your eyelids. You may see yourself right in your own eyes where God sees your heart isn't right at all. You may see yourself as wise, but because you don't have a proper fear of God, a reverence of God, your ways really, they're truly evil. We must not see ourselves more highly than we ought, but instead, we need to humble ourselves upon the God who is on high. The God who is on high. Now that we've looked at how eyes are for seeing, let's spend the rest of our time today realigning our eyesight. Realigning our eyesight. And we're going to do that by looking at 3 ways that Proverbs teaches that lead to failing eyesight. And then we'll look at 3 ways that Proverbs teaches how we can see with 20/20 vision. So let's first look at 3 things that lead to failing eyesight. And the first is this: having fool's eyes leads to failing eyesight. Having fool's eyes. We did a whole message a few weeks ago on fools, foolishness, and folly. Well, good sense also teaches us about how our eyes can lead us to being a fool. Look at Proverbs 12:15, what it teaches about this. It says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice." Listens to advice. Friends, if your eyes are always on you, always on your ways being right, and you won't listen to the advice of others, your eyes will lead you to be a real fool. A real fool. Have you ever seen someone who gets dead set on their way, only their way being right, so much so that they won't listen to anyone and they won't entertain any other ideas? It can be really sad, can't it? Can be really sad. It's like the story of the three men who had to identify what an elephant looks like. Three men who'd never seen an elephant before had to share what an elephant looked like from three different perspectives. Somebody places the large bed sheet in front of the elephant, and they cut two holes for arms to go through along the length of the elephant so that they could reach their hands through and then identify what an elephant looks like. So the first guy steps up to the elephant, puts his arms through at the front to get a hold of the trunk. And he begins to fill the trunk, and he says, well, the elephant looks like a long, wavy snake, kind of a wide snake, but you get to the top of the snake, and there's no mouth. There's just flatness and two holes. That's what an elephant looks like. The second guy's placed in the middle of the elephant, puts his arms through at the body of the elephant, and he feels around. He says, no. The elephant's not a snake. The elephant's like a big wall, a big brick wall. It's rough and tough, and it goes. It's huge, and you push it, it won't move. It's very strong. Very strong. It's a big wall. Third guy comes up, puts his arms through down at the feet of the elephant, and he says, no, you're wrong. The elephant's like the trunk of a tree. The trunk of a tree, and it gets all the way down to the ground. Very sturdy. Very sturdy. When the three men get done, they all stood around with one another and continued to argue about how they each saw an elephant in their own mind. None of them would budge on their opinion because they had proof, right? Proof right in front of them. What an elephant looks like. Their argument almost came to throwing blows, almost came to punches, with each man going away, set in his own mind on what an elephant looked like. And you know what? Each man was right, and each man was wrong. Each man was right, and each man was wrong. They only had a piece of their perspective. When you refuse to listen, you see things with a fool's eyes. With a fool's eyes. Second thing that leads to failing vision is having shifty eyes. Look at Proverbs 16, verse 30. With narrowed eyes, people plot evil. With a smirk, they plan their mischief. You know what that's like, right? You've been around people who you can just tell by their eyes that they're plotting something, that they're up to something that's no good. Your eyes can tell someone whether you're for them or you're against them, whether you care about them or you don't care, whether you mean well or you don't mean well. If you plot evil or mischief, your eyes will tell on you. They'll tell on you, and it will lead you to fail vision. Here's the third thing that leads to failing vision: having longing eyes. Longing eyes. Something we can get caught in a rut in is when we always are wanting more, always wanting something else, right? Always wanting something different. As our eyes search around us, and it's easy to look beyond what we do have and what we're blessed with and not being grateful for the blessings that are all around us, and we look out beyond to the things that we think that we should have and what we want to have, always looking for what you want next, and the path that leads is a path to leading to failing vision. You'll be blinded by what you want, and you can't see God's true fulfillment that might be right in front of you. This is what leads people to extended credit, broken relationships, unfinished business, and so many other destructions in life. The only thing that we should search for, the only thing we should long for, is Jesus. Jesus, seeking to know him and to walk with him, that clears our vision in how we see. Look at Proverbs 27, verse 20. It says, death and destruction are never satisfied, and neither are human eyes. Neither are human eyes. Human desire will never be satisfied. We always want the next best thing. We always want more. The only thing that satisfies, friends, is Jesus. Jesus told the woman at the well that I'll give you water that quenches your thirst forever, that will leave you never craving again. Set your eyes on Jesus, and he'll give you clear vision. Clear vision. In fact, he'll give you 20/20 vision. So let's look now at three things that lead to seeing with 20/20 vision. The first thing that leads to 20/20 vision is this: keep your eyes, your vision straight. Keep your vision straight. The thing that gets us off so much of the time is distraction and allowing ourselves to steer our own vision by ourselves instead of keeping it in line with God's vision. It's very easy to find yourself far from God's design and desire for you. It happens when you get caught up in others or other things or get caught up in yourself. Most of the world operates with a skewed vision based on self and self motives and distractions of the world. And the truth is that you can't have straight ahead. You can't see straight ahead while your head's turned at the distractions of your life. When your head's turned at other things. Try this with me once. Everyone in the room, turn your head to the right and leave your head turned there till I tell you to turn it back. Turn your head to the right. Go ahead and turn it and don't cheat here, all right? Now, keep your head to the right and just tell me, what color shirt am I wearing this morning? Now some of you are going to be able to do that because I wore a shirt that kind of stands out this morning. And you'll remember what I was wearing. Keep your head turned to the right. Keep it to the right. Now I want you to tell me, how many guitars are on the stage this morning? Some of you might figure that out as well. You might think about from weeks ahead. Maybe you've paid attention. Maybe you've noticed. Maybe you can answer that question. Or maybe you're in the band, or maybe you're Mike. That's cheating. Keep your heads turned to the right. Now tell me, how many fingers am I holding up? Now that's getting a little more difficult. Unless you have really good peripheral vision, you might be able to tell how many fingers I have standing up, but probably you can't tell that. Okay, turn your hands toward me and look at me again. Turn your head straight again. There you go. How many fingers am I holding up? I'm not holding up any. But you couldn't tell because your heads were turned the other way. Okay, you can look at me and you can see what I'm doing now. But friends, let's correlate that little experiment to keeping our vision straight with God. When we keep our vision straight on his path, it's much easier to see where God's leading us to follow. The vision of our eyes on him keeps things clear, right? It keeps them clear. But when we start looking away at the distractions, at another person, a new relationship, a new activity, a new place or thing, a new habit or self-motives, it doesn't take long till that vision starts to lose its clarity. We may still be able to operate with God for a while based on, not on the current vision we have on, but our memories of experiences. Like I remember he was wearing a blue-green shirt. We might be able to do that a bit. Those memories can keep us somewhat healthy for a while, but if we're not keeping ourselves in vision toward God, if we're not keeping that fresh, we're going to start zigzagging on the path. We're going to start zigzagging left and right and not going straight. You may have been able to tell me the color of my shirt, but what if I had you turn your heads to the right for like hours and you didn't know what question I was going to ask, and hours later I ask you, what color shirt am I wearing? The longer you have your eyes turned away from God's straight way, the harder it is to recognize what God's placing right in front of you. I can't see God like this when God's over here, right? It doesn't work that way. To have 20/20 vision, you need your vision straight, and you need to keep it straight by focusing on God and on his ways. Let's look at some of the good sense that Proverbs teaches about this. Look at Proverbs chapter 7, verses 1 through 3. It says, my son, my daughter, keep my words and treasures up. Keep my words and treasure up my commandments with you. Keep my commandments and live. Keep my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Now, you know what it means to keep something as the apple of your eye. That means you're keeping it in the center of your focus, right? In the center of your vision. We want to keep God's ways as a tablet on our heart, written on our hearts, as the center of our focus, the center of our vision that keeps our vision straight. Now look at Proverbs 23:26. It further emphasizes the point. My son, my daughter, give me your heart and let your heart, my eyes, observe your ways. Following God's ways is a heart thing. It's a heart thing. When you give him your heart, you have 20/20 vision with your eyes. You know how to follow him. It's surrendering your heart. Let's look at the second thing that leads to 20/20 vision. The second thing is this. Look with cheerful eyes. Cheerful. Listen to Proverbs 15:30. A cheerful look brings joy to the heart. Good news makes for good health. Makes for good health. Our world right now, my goodness, it seems so driven by just the gloomful look on life, on the things that bring fear to the heart, the things that bring bad news, that bring bad health. That's what it focuses on. How often do you see a cheerful headline anywhere? Anywhere? What's usually driving the coffee pot conversations in the office? What stories get the most attention in the gossip circles? We hear about all the wars and disasters and shootings and the cheatings and the bad things and all the awful things, but how often do we hear about any of the good things that go on? Because good things are going on too. They're just not in the headlines. They're not in the headlines. They're not in the conversation. They seem boring compared to the bad. What that mindset does is it distracts our vision. There's no gloom in God, not at all. No gloom in God at all. The gospel of Jesus isn't bad news. It's good news. It's the best news in the world. A cheerful look brings joy to your heart. Good news brings you good health. It brings you good health. So when you look for the cheerful, even in the midst of what may seem awful, it keeps our eyes in vision in 2020 with God. We're not talking about ignoring anything bad that happens and not dealing with it. You have to work through the difficult things, because I hate to tell you this, but the difficult's going to keep coming in life. It is. And when you don't deal with it, it only gets worse. But a cheerful outlook through it all, even as it's hard, having a cheerful outlook reminds you of the good God who's still in control. The good God who's still in control. You know, I'm going to tell on Rhonda. Rhonda Kratzer, from our very own church, I'm telling you, has been a living example of this for me. I was on vacation when she lost her home to a fire, and I called her a day or two after it happened. I thought I was going to be calling her to cheer her up. She cheered me up. She cheered me up in the conversation, and she's continued to carry this cheerful outlook through a horrible thing. Now, she's not perfect. I'm going to guess that she has times that she has a hard time keeping that 2020 vision in position in this situation, but she's continuing to look to God, and it brings her outlook back to cheerful. She's finding good news among tons of bad things, and it's keeping her heart in this matter healthy. And it's helping to keep my heart healthy by watching how you're doing it. The final thing that leads to 2020 vision is this: keep your eyes open. Keep them open. I'm sometimes guilty, friends, in not doing this. Sometimes when I see the direction it appears that things are headed in life, in this world, it's easier for me just to close my eyes. I just don't want to see it. I'm just going to close my eyes to what's going on. Closing your eyes on a grizzly bear attack, will that keep you from getting eaten? No, it won't, right? You're going to get eaten if you close your eyes to a grizzly bear attack. When we were at our cabin that we stayed at, not our cabin, the cabin we stayed at in the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee for our vacation, one of the things we can see is these notices around if a bear's coming close to you, or if you run into one, approaching one, you need to be cautious, right? Now, there aren't grizzlies there in the Smoky Mountains, but there are black bears, which typically aren't as aggressive as grizzlies. However, they can still be very dangerous. So we looked into what to do if you run into a black bear, you have a black bear encounter while we were there. And listen, here's the response I found. I looked in the last week here online to see, because I can't remember what we came up with, but I looked at what it said to do online, and this is what it says to do in an encounter with a black bear. Alter your route or back away slowly, preferably in the direction that you came from. That's the first thing. Try to slowly back away. Walk, don't run, and listen to this next part very closely, friends. Listen to this. Keep your eye on the bear. Don't close your eyes. Keep your eye on the bear so that you see how it reacts. In most cases, the bear will flee. If the bear walks toward you, stop, drop, and roll. Oh, that's the wrong thing. It's a fight. No, but if the bear comes towards you, you don't play dead. Some people think you play dead, right? Lay there and play dead. No, they eat dead things, right? Don't do that. Here's what you do. If it comes toward you, listen closely. Act boldly, yelling and throwing something at it. Act boldly, yelling and throwing something. I advise not to throw your phone. You might find that you need that. Maybe throw your kid. I don't know. Throw something at it. And be bold. As believers, get this, and as the church, we've got to keep our eyes open. We need to back away slowly when that's appropriate, and we need to act boldly and flail our arms when it's needed. Maybe not throw things, but we need to be bold at times. The church has closed its eyes to far too many things. That's why abortion at will has gone unchecked for so long. Public education goes unchallenged. Hunger and poverty go unnoticed. Domestic abuse is ignored by neighbors, and it's why people struggle being alone with depression and grief and loss and anger and loneliness, and nobody opens their eyes to them. We, God's people, close our eyes to way too many things that God's eyes are always open to, and we cannot have 20/20 vision when that's going on. We can't. Am I sounding preachy? That's okay, I'm a preacher. And I'm preaching to myself. So I can sound preachy because I'm preaching to myself. Friends, this is why the United Methodist Church is in the dilemma that it's in. It's closed its eyes to what the Bible teaches is true on sexuality and so many other things. And most of those who've retained what's biblical within the denomination, who've stayed biblical, they still spent far too many years closing their eyes to what was going on in the rest of the denomination. And so now there are people confused, divided, and even mean-spirited at times. Open your eyes. You can't have 20/20 vision with your eyes closed. You can't. Look at Proverbs 28:27-28. Whoever gives to the poor will lack nothing, but those who close their eyes to poverty will be cursed. When the wicked take charge, people go into hiding. When the wicked meet disaster, the godly flourish. Friends, closing your eyes brings curses, and it places the wicked in charge and throws the godly into hiding. The real church needs to open their eyes, and then they're going to flourish. Then they're going to flourish. Friends, our eyes are the portal to what's going on in the inside. They're the portal to what's happening in here. And so we need to be careful, little eyes, what we see. The distractions come easy. The vision is a failure, happens almost daily. But it's the 20/20 vision that will keep our path straight. Seek God's way. Keep your eyes on the cheerful reality of the good God that we have, and keep your eyes open to be ready to follow God. Let's pray together. God, thank you that you give us eyes to see. You give us ears to hear. You give us hands and feet to do. But God, with all of those things comes responsibility. I am responsible for what I let come into these portals. I am responsible to what's coming into my mind and into my heart. I am responsible to what I do with my hands and my feet. I'm responsible. You've given me the gift to see so that I can find you. And now that I've found you, God, I need to live for you in every way. God, open the eyes of your people. Open the eyes of your church. Help us not to miss what's right in front of us, and help us to respond exactly how Jesus would in every occasion. Every occasion. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, friends, thank you all so much. It's been a beautiful morning together. Worship's been great. Our fellowship with one another has been great. Let that continue as we leave this morning. Feel free to talk as much as you want, have more cookies and coffee if there's anything left when you leave. And let's just enjoy the body of Christ together as we're dismissed. God bless you. Love you all. We'll see you next week.